Thank you. So our next talk, continuing in the version control systems theme, we've got Carol. He's going to be talking about Git and Rust and Git Oxide. Okay? Thank you.
Cool. Thank you. Hello, everybody. You can hear me at the back, right?
Yeah.
Sounds great. So today, sitting in the Rust room today, I learned two things. Falling into the pit of success. A great way to do this is to speak about how great Rust is. And we're definitely going to get there. To get a bunch of laughs out of the room, I learned you dunk on C++ or C. Works every time. I'm going to talk about taming Git complexity or just doing weird stuff with Git. So let me just introduce myself real quick. My name is Kirill. I've been coding since 2004. I've been hacking on version control since 2020. So I really like version control, to keep doing it. And I'm a co-founder of a company called Git Butler. That's enough. So let's talk about why you want to hack on Git stuff. What do I mean by hack is programmatically operate Git, right? So what that means is maybe you want to do some useful things like package managers. Are there anybody working on package managers, package management in the audience? Person there? Actually, quite a few. Developer tools? Anybody? Oh, wow. That's actually a lot of the developer tools folks. Is anybody automating or customizing your workflow in Git? Actually, that's half of the audience. All right, so this is going to be relevant, I think. I think it's also real fun programming Git or like just working with the data structures that our version control gives us and just doing stuff with that. It's kind of fun. So our agenda today, we have three themes. So I'm going to introduce you the Git data model, data structure, and kind of tell you about how awesome it is and why it's awesome. I'm going to show you how to build stuff with a library called Git Oxide. And Git Oxide is really cool, so hopefully by the end of this talk, you'll be pulling it from GitHub. And then I will do a very quick demo for actually having implemented the stuff with Git Oxide. If you have any questions, heckle me, right? Just shout. That's fine. I love it. So, how many of you are using Git? Literally, everybody, right? How many of you know the data model of Git? Like, how should it stored on disk? Like, about half of the room. So, I think Git has been partly the reason for why Git has been so successful is like the simple, very hackable primitives. And what I mean by hackable is like easy to work with. So in Git, everything is content addressable, right? Like you have the content is the identifier for the data. That's cool. You have snapshots instead of diffs. So that means that you're looking at diffs, but the system underneath is writing snapshots. That's a limitation, but that's also what makes it simple. Git works on the immutability principles, right? So you write data, it doesn't change afterwards. Kind of makes things simpler to work with. So I'm going to share four concepts with you about the Git data model. By the end of this, it's not going to take long, but by the end of this, you will know more about Git than 90% of developers out there. Right, so in Git, you have blobs. So content is everything, and this is essentially this content addressable nature I mentioned earlier. So in Git, a blob is the file content and a hash for it. That's it, right? Like you, in the example up there, your file content, you get a hash out of it. This is abbreviated, that's your blob. That's all. There is no file name. There is no metadata. It's just a bunch of content. And that means it's reusable. So if you have two files with the exact same content, you don't have another object for it, right? It's the same thing in the object store. So that's number one, blobs. So we're going to build up from blobs into all the way to a version control system. So you have blobs, very simple. Then you have the concept of trees. In Git, we talk, oh, tree this, tree that. Sounds like a complicated data structure. It's just a file system. It's just like a, you know, a directory, organizing the blob into a snapshot of a directory. So as you see in the example over there, I have two trees. And you see that those trees, now you have the file name and a bunch of, you know, like a little bit extra metadata. But these trees are pointing to the blobs that we spoke about or other trees. And that's kind of how the system builds up. Then you have, So you're pointing to blobs or other trees, and entries in this structure are your name plus mode plus a hash. There's nothing else. That's all. Building on top of that, you have commits. Now, commits is the term that you work with every day, and it's a snapshot in time of your work. And a commit is essentially a pointer to a tree plus a little bit of metadata, right? Like, you have the author, this little commit message, did stuff, right? I'm sure nobody writes commit messages like that. Am I right? And as you know, commits form a graph, right? Like, you have a commit, one of those metadata pieces that you work with is the parent, one or multiple, right? Like, you have a parent that precedes it, and that's kind of that forms your history. You can traverse it, and that's, you know, what happens when you log your history. And if you happen to have more than one parent, that's called a merge commit, and those are wonderful. All right. So finally, the last concept that I'm sure you already understand, but references. And this is just branches. Like, or let's focus on branches for now. It's simply names for commits. That's all. And updating a branch is just moving the pointer. So if you create a new commit, the pointer moves. That's all. It also happens to be the case that there is this special branch called head, which is what I have checked out right now. This is more or less the interesting parts. With this setup, you have now enough knowledge to be dangerous. You can go ahead and start editing the... No, you should not edit the Git directory directly. Things will get messy very quickly. But this sets you up for using the Git plumbing. And what that usually means in the context of Git is like the plumbing commands, right? Like Git hash object, right? Like, you take a blob, you get a hash out of it, or cat file to get information about from the object database. You don't want to do that, right? Like, one of the reasons, like, there's many reasons why you don't want to fork exec these commands, but the number one reason is it's kind of rigid. You can't get all the things that you want to do with those commands. They are built for the Git kind of workflow, the way it's been always known. So you want something more flexible. So what would you imagine? You may want to say, huh, well, Git is open source. I'm going to use it as a library. So you go into the code base. There is this libgit.a. And you think you may want to link this into your application and use that. Sounds like a great idea. Well, you can't. This just does not work. And the reason is this code base is not set up for that. It's not appropriate. It does funny little things. Like, inside functions, it thinks it owns the process. So it does this wonderful, wonderful die function. It exits your process. You don't want that randomly sprinkled. So you can't use libgit.a. So this was the part where I was dunking on a C code base. Now, this also means you need a library, or like, you obviously need the library if you want to access programmatically the Git stuff. And I'm going to give you a very unfair list. Why is it unfair? I'm not going to cover everything. There is libgit 2, which if you're a Rust user, you may have seen the crust git 2. Anybody use the crate git tool in the audience? A few people, right? So this is Rust bindings for libgit2, and libgit2 is great. It's been around for a while. It's mature, etc. So it does a lot. There is other libraries. That's why it's unfair. I kind of bucketed it into other. You have jgit, gogit, etc. And then you have gitoxide. This is the rest. The rest of the talk is about gitoxide. So gitoxide is Rust, like pure Rust implementation of these structures. This is just a very quick kind of map of what's the how to say the ecosystem like. Every pixel in that image is a line of code, and that's a lot of pixels crammed in there. So in the background, this is the cgit code base. That's the one with the die and shared state and et cetera. That's the background. And then you have the jgit. So it's a large library. Like it's been around for a long time. There is gogit, libgit2. And then in the top right corner, that's gitoxide. That's at least as of 2024, the size of the project. Right. So let me introduce to you gitoxide. Anybody here who has used gitoxide? All right, quite a few people. So it's a library by Byron or Sebastian. It's actually a really cool project. So what's really cool about it, or like traditionally, it's Git compatible. So it does what Git would do, right? It doesn't do anything weird. Objects that it writes are going to be compatible. It reads it the same way, and so on. It is safe. It is performant. It's performant because, you know, like memory safety, you can parallelize and so on. But the part that's interesting is it also comes with scalpels included. And that just simply means it's very flexible. You can do a lot of weird things, or you can manipulate stuff in a flexible way. So that means the library gives you a lot of knobs and buttons, things to tweak, things to adjust. This is like maybe too much of an example, but this is, you know, imagining that we're going to clone using gitoxide. So you can configure your remote. You can do like shallow cloning. You can pick a specific branch. You can override configs. You can customize your fetch, right? Like skip the tags in this example. You can you can track the progress if you want, you know, kind of display it to the user in any way, etc. Or handle the interrupts. But the thing that's actually is really cool is also it allows you to do kind of more sophisticated operations. Like you can be doing your updates atomically, right? Like you can do stuff in memory, or in this case, you can prevent race conditions by saying, okay, I want to mutate my references in a particular way, and I'm gonna open a transaction, prepare it, and try to obtain a lock. And if it can't, it will fail, and then do everything in the very end atomically, which is kind of neat. If you want to do stuff with your if you're doing something specific that you want to make edits like that. So I'm going to run you through a quick real-world example. So let's pretend that we want to be a good Gitizen, right? Like what that might mean is you want to make your commits super focused way. You have you want them to do one thing and not another, just like a small focus commits. And sometimes you may want to move stuff between commits, right? Like in this case, let's pretend that this file that went into one commit is supposed to go somewhere else, right? Or somebody in code review told you, hey, split your commit. So how would you do that, right? Does anybody change their commits after they've written them? Okay, that's the whole room. So let's pretend that we do this Git gymnastics together, right? You have to do an interactive rebase. And that's the happy case scenario. So what do? You do an interactive rebase. You mark your source and destination as edit. you then reset to a particular point, and then you stop at a commit and reset there. So let's say you were extracting this utils file, and then it's out, and then you continue your rebase, and that's then you stop at the destination commit. You add, you know, it's a dance. And if you had the commits the other way around, you have to do the what I like calling the double interactive rebase sandwich. You don't want to do that, or it's not very pleasant. So let's implement that using GitOxide. Right? This is doing weird stuff with Git after all. So let's see. So you've now imported the library and you have Gix open. So you open the repository in memory. So that's what we're doing here. Gix open with object memory. Okay, right. So here's something that we've set up. It's not actually Gix, but we set up something with Git Gix primitives, and then you look up the commits. Right, like you have the hashes. You can look them up. What GitOxide does it loads these lazily, right? Like, so you're not parsing the commit message and everything until you actually access it, which is pretty neat. And in this case, we don't need it until, or we only need the tree. So, next, we need to subtract changes from the first commit. Let's say, so in this case, you need to get the diff spec of what you're subtracting. Okay, well, let's say we have some function doing that. And then you have to do like a removal. You want to extract things out of a tree. And you know, you build this with GitOxide primitives that later you can say, okay, I'm now going to swap out the tree that had my change with the tree that does not. Next, you want to inject that change into the other commit, right? Like to do it atomically. And here we're doing a three-way merge. Sounds interesting. You're doing the three-way merge of where the base is the source without the changes, then the one side is the part with the tree changes, the other one is the destination where you want to actually put the changes. And then you do the same swap operation. And then do everything in memory, and at the very end, you write to disk, right? So, time for a demo. So I showed you in theory how that could look like. So I'm going to demonstrate that it actually works. You can do that. So it's a very quick one. Just one very small example. So over here, is this big enough, by the way?
No.
OK. OK, people at the front are saying the size is perfect. So I'm going to go with that. OK, so this is just commit history. And let's, for a second, pretend that this commit, we don't care about the message. We only care about the fact that this README does not belong there. It belongs in this commit 5.3 something. So what you up arrow a bunch of times. OK, so what you, I'll make this bigger. So what I can say is I'm moving this README from that F7 commit into commit 53. Run this, done. Let's actually verify that it worked. If I run the log again with this, right there, right? Single atomic operation. So if it failed, it would fail in memory, it would let me know, and then kind of not proceed or not reach a partial success case. And let's actually, since we have more time, let's move it somewhere else. Let's move it in this commit 24. So let's say BD uh, 24, right? So we've done it again. Right? It's the same kind of move operation. Now it's in the. So let's verify. Now, yeah, right. It's now this commit. So. You know, you can do stuff like that with library access to Git structures. Okay, that's it. I'm gonna leave you guys with just two final takes. One is kind of silly. The other one is a little bit more philosophical, or it will attempt to be philosophical. Now, the first one is that Git is awesome, and GitOxide is pretty cool. If you haven't, you should try it out. after this talk, get the code, check it out. And the other one is the philosophical one. So when facing a problem, we always have a choice. And the choice is to either spend a few hours and do the boring work, or spend a few weeks building a tool. And since this is about hacking, hacking with Git, I would encourage you to always choose making the tool. After all, we are on a Sunday talking about Rust, or like listening about Rust. So yeah, I think that's the right choice. So thank you very much. We have some time for Q&A.
Questions.
I have one question and one remark. Can you show back the when you did the demo? We can show back here. When you did the demo, it doesn't tell you that you created a commit without any content, because when you move the file between the commits, the original one didn't have any content left.
Yeah.
It doesn't tell you at all that you. That you now have an empty commit in your story that doesn't do anything in the...
Right. So I think the question is, why was there no content after I extracted the file?
No, I get why there's no content, but why doesn't it tell you that there's no content left and you have an empty commit in your story now?
This was a demo, right? Like, it was just like an example of what you can do. So I think what you're saying is it makes sense to inform the user that, you're going to make an empty commit. That's completely fair. It probably should.
Okay. And just a remark. I think there was an earlier presentation yesterday. In 2.54 of Git, there will be comments to modify the history of different commits. And for instance, you will be able to split commits, reward them, and rewrite their content after they have been landed and such. So I think that would be interesting for this.
Yeah. I guess what you're saying is more and more of this functionality is kind of potentially going into mainline Git. You could. At some point, we will have perhaps some of these in Git. Any questions?
Hi. Often I like to change the metadata. So, for example, in this case, you moved the content, like, does it retain the metadata in this case, or does it overwrite with the current metadata?
Well, so the question is, should you change the metadata as you made these kind of operations? Like, it's up to you, right? Like, it's about using the library and what you could do with programmatic access. So if your use case means that, the metadata needs to change, like the timestamp or something, like, absolutely.
Okay, there's that handle to do it.
Pardon?
I have the capability to do it.
Yes, right. Like because you have all the bits and bobs to tweak.
Great demo. Thank you. Git, and I've used some internal Git libraries in the past, and re-implementations of Git in different languages suffer from performance with like packing objects and compressing and all the weird internals of Git. I imagine you guys may have done benchmarks against base Git and Git Oxide, but is Git Oxide fairly close to raw Git in terms of its pack and clone type performance?
So the maintainer and author of Git Oxide is very performance conscious, and so he cares very deeply about making a performant library. That means that a lot of the aspects of the library are fast, and I know that cloning in particular is nice and fast because it can do things due to, you know, it's able to parallelize some of the workload, so some of the operations are faster than mainline Git. And yeah,
what algorithm does it use for
what algorithm does Git Oxide use for pack file for delta compression?
The question is, I do not know. I just don't know the answer to this.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I think that's
That's all the time we have, I'm afraid. But you can catch Kirill.
Yeah, you
in
can
the
talk outside
track.
If you guys want. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank
that
you.
Was super interesting.
Cheers.